Karma ashayam, the desire for fruit of activities. Ridhiya granti, the knot in the heart. Pandham, bondage. Avidyaya, because of ignorance. Asadatam, brought about. Apramataha, not being covered by ignorance or illusion. Very careful. Anena, by this. Yogena, practice of yoga. Yata upadesham, as advised. Samyak, completely. Vyapoya, becoming free from. Aparamita, should desist. One should desist. Yogat, from the practice of yoga, the means of liberation. So translation. As I have advised you, my dear sons, you should act accordingly. Be very careful. By these means, you will be freed from the ignorance of the desire for fruit of activity, and the knot of bondage in the heart will be completely severed. Sorry. For further advancement, you should also give up the means. That is, you should not become attached to the process of liberation itself. As I have advised, please repeat, as I have advised you, my dear sons, you should act accordingly. Be very careful. By these means, you'll be freed from the ignorance of the desire for fruit of activity and the knot of bondage in the heart will be completely severed. For further advancement, you should also give up the means. That is, you should not become attached to the process of liberation itself. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. The process of liberation is Brahma Jigyasa, the search for the Absolute Truth. Generally, Brahma Jigyasa is called Neti Neti, the process by which one analyzes the existence to search out the Absolute Truth. This method continues as long as one is not situated in his spiritual life. Spiritual life is Brahma Bhuta, the self-realized state. In the words of Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, text 54, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, Nashochati Nakankshati, Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. The idea is to enter into the para-bhakti, the transcendental devotional service of the Supreme Lord. To attain this, one must analyze one's existence, but when one is actually engaged in devotional service, he should not bother seeking out knowledge. By simply engaging in devotional service undeviatingly, one will always remain in a liberated condition. Mamchayo vyavicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati jayatan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. This is from the Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, text 26. The unflinching execution of devotional service is in itself Brahmavuta. Another important feature in this connection is anena yogena yatopadesham. The instruction received from the spiritual master must be followed immediately. One should not deviate from or surpass the instructions of the spiritual master. One should not be simply intent on consulting books, but should simultaneously execute the spiritual master's order, yatopadesham. Mystic power should be achieved to enable one to give up the material conception. But when one actually engages in devotional service, one does not need to practice the mystic yoga system. The point is that one can give up the practice of yoga, but devotional service cannot be given up. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, 7th chapter, text 10. Akaramascha munio nigranta pi urkrume kurvantya khayita kim bhaktim itam bhuta guno harihi. Even those who are liberated, Atmarama, must always engage in devotional service. One may give up the practice of yoga when one is self-realized, but at no stage can one give up devotional service. All other activities for self-realization, including yoga and philosophical speculation, may be given up, but devotional service must be retained at all times. Karmashayam ridya granti vandham avidyaya saritam apramattaha anena yogena yatopatesham samyagvyapo yo parameta yogat. So Om Ganat Vananda Shag Ananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So when I read this verse, I was reminded of a very similar verse in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 6th chapter of the Gita, text 3, which pretty much says the same thing. It's interesting. It's a parallel verse. I'll read the verse. Aru rukshor muner yogam karma karna muchate yogaru dasya tashaiva shama karna muchate. For one who is a neophyte in the eightfold yoga system, work is said to be the means. And for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. So it's pretty much the same thing. And Prabhupada explains in his purport that the process of linking oneself with the Supreme is called yoga. It may be compared to a ladder for attaining the topmost spiritual realization. This ladder begins from the lowest material condition of the living entity and rises up to perfect self-realization and pure spiritual life. According to various elevations, different parts of the ladder are known by different means. But all in all, the complete ladder is called yoga and may be divided into three parts, namely Jnana Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. The beginning of the ladder is called the Yoga Ruksha stage, and the highest rung is called Yoga Rudha. Concerning the Eightfold Yoga System, attempts in the beginning to enter into meditation through regulated principles of life and practice of different sitting postures, which are more or less bodily exercises, are considered fruit of material activities. All such activities lead to achieving perfect mental equilibrium to control the senses. When one has accomplished in the practice of meditation, he ceases all disturbing mental activities. A Krishna-conscious person, however, is situated from the beginning on the platform of meditation because he always thinks of Krishna. And being constantly engaged in the service of Krishna, he is considered to have ceased all material activities. So, generally, talking about the Eightfold Yoga System, Ashtanga. Ashtanga means eight limbs. Patanjali, who was the author of the Eightfold System, actually, Patanjali didn't teach many postures, just one or two. All these postures nowadays are just modern inventions, basically, the last few hundred years. Patanjali, he taught what the Eightfold System is, yam, niyam. And the first part is yam, which doesn't mean something's delicious. You know, yum, yum. It means restrictions. And they don't even get that part with as big as the other parts. So what do we mean by restrictions? You know, no illicit sex. Or as like Krishna describes in the Gita, to practice the Ashtanga Yoga System, one has to go to a secluded place, sit on deer skin, control the breathing, nityahara viharasya, not eat too much, not eat too little. There's no question of sex life. It's not that you go to a yoga studio where all these little yoginis are doing their exercise. Just like I have one friend. He's a devotee. He's actually a very nice devotee. Amala Bhakta. Some of you know him. He was a yoga teacher before. And I was actually his bhakta leader. It was interesting. Not of hatha yoga. Bhakti yoga. He lived with me when he first joined the Krishna Conscious Movement. He was in Los Angeles. So he joined the movement. He was a yoga teacher. And he was very good at yoga teacher. Of course, he doesn't teach that sort of yoga anymore. I have other disciples who are yoga teachers now. One of them knows hundreds of postures. He's from Finland. And he's one of the 10 most expert posture teachers in the world. Some of you have met him. Gokul. I think Sadhvi's met him, right? Wasn't he with us in India? Anyway. He was in India, yeah. So he joined the movement, and I was asking him about his yoga practice. I said, look, you're teaching this yoga, and frankly, most of your students are girls, right? He said, yeah. I said, when you're teaching the yoga, does it agitate your mind? Are you thinking of the girls while you're teaching your postures? Well, you were teaching your postures. He wasn't doing it then. And it was just like the emperor's new clothes type of thing. The emperor's new clothes, nobody admitted that the emperor was walking around naked. He admitted. He said, yes, actually, I found it quite, he didn't say disturbing, he found it quite interesting. teaching the women the yoga postures, and the women wear their little, leotards or whatever they were wearing, or tutus. That's ballet, I think. So there, so his mind, instead of being absorbed in the yoga postures, was absorbed in the ladies. I mean, that's natural. I'm not saying, I'm not finding fault with him for that, because, there's certain, we were talking about this last night, there's certain things built into different bodies. The male bodies have certain things built into them, like a competitive spirit. And female bodies have something built into them, like they want to decorate their bodies and put on earrings and go to social gatherings and meet with friends. Even that Sati, she succumbed to that. We were talking about that last night. Sati was warned by her husband, Lord Shiva, don't go. And she was just so attached to going in her social life, basically, meeting with her family members and whatever. So there's certain things that are built into certain bodies that we have to be aware of when we're dealing with Krishna consciousness, certain frailties. So obviously it's not advisable for a man to teach yoga postures to women for that reason, because even Lord Chaitanya said that if he saw the wooden form of a woman, he would feel changes in his body and mind. I mean, so there's certain things you have to be aware of that are weaknesses that go with particular types of bodies, you understand? Or, on the other hand, the ladies, when they hear of a social gathering, they'll want to go for that and meet their friends. So that, even if it means traveling halfway around the world with friends and family. Whereas the men, friends and family, Hare Krishna. So, there's different propensities. Just be aware of it. And those are your weaknesses, your physical weaknesses or your bodily weaknesses. Don't succumb to them. So anyway, getting back to the point. So basically, he wasn't teaching the first principle of yoga, which is, restrictions, yam. Like we have our four regulative principles. I mean, that's one of the first things we teach people. Because in order to perform bhakti or to be attracted to Krishna's holy names, one has to be relatively sinless. Yesham twandagatam pampam. Yesham twandagatam pampam. Janam punyakarmanam didvandva maha nirmukta bhajanti mam jadavrata. That's a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. One has to come to the end of sin to be dridavrata. Dridavrata means determined in devotional service. Because if your mind is absorbed in sin or sense gratification, then Bhagavad Gita also tells us, Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam, Tayaya Aprita Chetasam, Vyavitsayatmika Abhudhir, Samadho Navatiyate. It's a very important verse. That if one's mind is attached to bhoga, you know, bhoga means basically enjoyment, and aishvarya, you know, opulence, you know, dressing nicely, nice earrings and everything like that, because I'm not attached to that. But it's for the ladies. The men are attached to more bhoga, and the ladies are attached to more aishvarya, isn't it? It's really interesting. It's really interesting how that, you know, men are from Mars and women are from Venus. So, different things we're attached to. I mean, who cares about nice clothes? You know, just like I was in Govardhan. And I was just washing my clothes every day, putting them out. And, you know, one of my lady disciples, a group of people came from Vrindavan, and they said, well, do you iron your clothes? I said, no, why? Why should I iron clothes? What's the use of it? You know, I'm not going on a preaching engagement. And they're going to get wrinkled anyway. As soon as you put them on, you know, after 2 hours. You know, that's what men think like that, but women, they don't. You know, they'll be alone and they'll be ironing their clothes. Like that, isn't it? Iron, iron. Anyway, so bhoga. A little interesting information. Bhoga Aishvarya Prasaktanam. One who's attached to bhoga and Aishvarya, material enjoyment and opulence and dressing nicely, or like men, they're really attached to the gross enjoyment. You know, really gross enjoyment. I mean, there's certain things, or competitive spirit. You know, men always get competitive like that. I mean, just even reveal my mind. Last night, I dreamt that I was wrestling one of my god brothers, one of my guru god brothers, and I won, and I was very happy. Wrestling. Anyway, you don't want to know. You don't want to know. Because I would always play sporting games with him before, you know, and he would defeat me at volleyball and everything. So last night I had, you know, so it's just like a man thing, you know, you're just like, and I became very happy. I woke up, you know, jai, honey bowl. So, anyway, so bhoga aishvarya prasakta. One is very attached to these things. So in other words, the first thing is to give up bhoga and aishvarya if one wants to advance. Prasaktanam tayaya pritta chetasam. So your mind cannot be fixed in Krishna. And then vyavasayatmika. So the one-pointed determination that's necessary to advance in devotional service is not achieved. Vyavasayatmika bhutir. That means the mind or the intelligence is one-pointed. Because there's another verse in the Bhagavad Gita that's, you know, right before that, that it talks about Vyavasayatmika Bhudir, Ekeha Kurunandana, Bhavshakta Sunantas Cha, that says that one mind has to be completely fixed on the goal in order to achieve Krishna consciousness. So, Samadho Nadvatide. So he doesn't achieve from Samadhi, which is the goal of yoga anyway. So therefore, in the beginning of yoga, the first thing is yam, restrictions. And then, of course, after that, you get some niyam stuff, which means basically some positive injunctions, like you go to a secluded place and you sit down on deer skin. There was a reason for deer skin, not that you just simply wanted to cut the skin off of the deer and it was comfortable. It kept snakes away. That's the reason for deer skin. Everything has some purpose. You know, you don't want snakes crawling on you and biting you when you're trying to do your yoga postures. It's not so productive. So yamna, niyam, then asana, you sit in a certain way. Not that you have to learn all these fancy ways of twisting your body. Asana and then pranayam. And breathing is actually very important. You know, you offer the ingoing breath to the outgoing breath and the outgoing breath. Why is that? Why is it important? Because it's all part of what Patanjali says is stop the vritti, or the turning of the mind. And the breathing is really important because the subtle body is actually balanced on the life airs. which is a, you know, it's a little yoga information for you here, that the, you know, there's five life airs, you know, that are described, and I don't remember all the names, Pana, Apana, Udana, and all these life airs, when they're disturbed, if they get really disturbed, you're crazy. Prabhupada actually said that one who is mentally ill is due to the disturbance of the life airs. So that's, I mean, I'm not saying that that, you know, we just blame the life airs. You know, there's also cause and effect, that one can have like a traumatic experience and that can disturb the life airs. So it's not that the life airs being disturbed are the actual cause of the mental illness. There may be something else that causes the life airs to be disturbed. You know, it's a very holistic type of thing. I mean, you may have a car accident that causes the life airs to be disturbed. And then your mind, you know, you lose your memory or whatever. So the reason for the pranayama is to actually balance these life airs so that the mind can be very peaceful. Vritti. Vritti means like the turning of the mind. Like in English, we have the word invert, subvert, pervert, revert, whatever. You know, so it's the same sort of thing. The turning of the mind. Patanjali says the whole point is to stop the turning of the mind, to be able to focus. You understand? Focus the mind. Because right now, I mean, practically everybody has ADD. ADD, you know what that is? Attention deficit disorder. I mean, the mind, just like when I'm giving class, I have to be very conscious that, you know, people's span of attention lasts for approximately 10 seconds or less. So I have to, you know, really either tell a joke or just do some bodily thing or just keep everyone's attention somehow or other. So that's Kali Yuga. Manda Sumanda Matiyo Manda Bhagyo Padrata is described. When everyone is unfortunate, short-lived, they're less intelligent, you know, so it's very hard to focus the mind. And even Arjuna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. In the sixth chapter, Arjuna says, Chanchalahi Manha Krishna Pramati Balabhadrudam Tashaham Nigraham Manye Vayor Iva Shirushkam. The mind is restless, turbulent, and obstinate, and to control it is more or less by controlling the wind. I mean, it just goes all over the place. I mean, I noticed that too. I mean, it's something can really set off the mind. Like, the other night I was listening to some nice Krishna katha, and then there was an email that caused my mind to be disturbed, and then I couldn't hear it anymore. I'm sure you've experienced that, isn't it? That, you know, some little thing just like sets it off, and then you're trying to listen to the same MP3 thing, but you can't hear it. I was just like saying, why can't I hear this thing? It's nectarian Krishna katha. But my mind was disturbed by this particular problem that was occurring there, or the potential. I mean, that's even worse. You know, what if? The what if? It's worse than actual problems occurring. It's like, what if this happens? Then that'll happen. Then, isn't it? So, you know, what if I get sick? You know, because I don't think about that, but it was due to some other spiritual situation somewhere else. Or someone called me the other night, last night, actually, and he was saying that, he said, I don't know, I have to call you. My mind's going crazy about, you know, some business. It has to do with money. I said, you know, just sit and chant Hare Krishna. He said, I can't, you know, I can't concentrate. I said, then take a walk and chant Hare Krishna. You know, take a walk, because sometimes physical, that's also, you know, why sometimes the postures are good, because they actually, you know, when you do something physical, it actually helps you focus the mind more. I mean, that's just a practical thing. Just like many years ago, we had one lady who would give class in the temple sometimes, and I would like to do things with my hands while she was giving class, like make little giwiks and things like that. And she would always criticize me, saying, you know, this is not arts and crafts time. I don't know if you all remember that.
I remember the little giwiks. I was just telling someone about
it. And I said, it helps me focus my mind more. So that, you know, that's why you have the yoga postures too. So there's a reason for that. You see, it's not that, not just, they're not just nonsense. There's a reason, because when you, when there's something physical going on, it diverts the energy, so it doesn't go in the mind, and the mind is just like giving you static all the time. So there's a reason for asana, pranayama, and then, because when you're able to do that, focus the mind, then pratyahara, then you're able to withdraw the mind from the external things going on, and meditate dharana, focus the mind more in dhyana, and meditate, you know, even more, and then samadhi means absorption in a particular object. So these are all, it's interesting, these are all means which, when one achieves a higher stage, you don't have to do them anymore. And it's interesting, I was hearing from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopal Kumar was talking to these sages, where was it, Tapaloka, and they were talking about how meditation is better than chanting, or, you know, meditation is better than seeing God. Because they said, if you can see God in your heart, you know, why are you going to bother to see him externally? It was an interesting discussion. There was these sages, Pipalayana and others, actually the Navayogendras, they were talking like that. And it was an interesting discussion about that. And then it turns out that the chanting and the transcendental sound vibration actually is much more powerful than any of these other means of meditation. Like just sitting there and trying to focus the mind. But especially in this day and age, the chanting is the most, practically is the only effective means of focusing the mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then you really don't have to worry about these other means if you can chant, if you can hear something, like Prabhupada said, just hear the sound. It's not an artificial imposition of the mind, just hear the sound vibration. And that activity, just like it's described here, that the other activities that are preliminary, they definitely have to be given up. It's not that when one sees Krishna and enters into his eternal relationship with Krishna and understands his siddhadeya, that he's still sitting in a yoga posture chanting Om. I mean, that would be ridiculous. That would be absolutely ridiculous. So he gives up preliminary things. I mean, it's not that we have to sit like that too. So, but the interesting thing about the Nava Bhakti, the nine processes of devotional service, beginning with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna, they're not given up. These are eternal activities. And so because we have been introduced and given by the blessings of His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, these nine processes of devotional service, we don't have to worry about the point of giving them up. It's not that, you know, you become Krishna conscious and then you become detached from chanting, or you become detached from hearing, or you become detached from remembering, or become detached from serving the lotus feet, or becoming a servant, or you become detached from surrendering everything. That would be a Mayavadi conception. In the Mayavadi conception, yes, you use all these means, you worship Krishna to become liberated. But in our understanding, you use all these means, and these means continue after the point of liberation. So we should, my point is, in class, we should become very attached to the nine processes of devotional service. They're not simply a part of the ladder. They're the goal, they're the sadhya, as well as the sadhana. Sadhya means goal, and sadhana means the process to reach.